Welcome to the Capital News. I am your host, Alex Caritas. Today is Sunday, June 20th, 2021. Thank you so much for joining me. Quick shout out to all the dads out there. Happy Father's Day. Hope you're all spoiled as you deserve to be. So hopefully it's a nice day to be enjoyed by everybody out there, especially in this crazy year, continuing the crazy year that we had last year as well. So hopefully this year things are opened up. You can get back to doing some things that maybe was a little bit more of a tradition on Father's Day. So hopefully that's the case today. So again, happy Father's Day. Title of today's podcast, On the Road to Stagflation. This is a question, and we will pursue the answer. So I want to talk a little bit about market performance over the past week since I was unable to do a podcast last week. So I wanted to make sure that I got one done today. And I may even do a second one this evening. I may do a markets overnight segment if I have time to do so. That way we just sort of keep the numbers up. I want to talk briefly about retail sales, just the fact that they missed for last month, which is no surprise to us here at the Capital News, because this has been following, the trend of, if you're getting money from the government, retail sales take off, they beat expectations. If you don't get a stimulus check, if there's not a lot of money coming from Uncle Sam into your pocket, then they start to fall off, they start to fall underneath market expectations, which was the case for last month. So, barring any other stimulus from Uncle Sam, and believe me, it is a possibility depending on what happens over the course of the next few months, but assuming that that doesn't happen, assuming that Uncle Sam doesn't throw out another stimulus check out there, retail sales are going to continue to plateau and fall off. It's just the story of it. The only way that they'll look better, perhaps, is because prices are going up, not because people are actually buying more stuff, purchasing more services and goods, but just that the prices of those goods and services have gone up. And so that gets counted. And then they say, retail sales went up. That's the only way it's going to be. So again, as we discussed before, inflation is extremely distortionary. Debt is extremely distortionary. And we continue to have all of these distortionary policies that continue to be implemented day in and day out from the federal government, from the Federal Reserve. So since I like to do the Thursday data dive, that's what we're going to have or focus our discussion on mainly today, because I want to go over the initial jobless claims numbers that came out on Thursday, and I want to go over the Federal Reserve's balance sheet that was also updated, which we talk about here on a weekly basis as well. And no surprise, it is at an all-time high. And I also want to discuss briefly and maybe hold this off more so for a conversation on a markets overnight segment or something else later next week, but a discussion of what the Federal Reserve decided to discuss on Wednesday, because they had their Federal Open Market Committee, FOMC meeting, had the conclusion. Jay Powell, the chairman of the Federal Reserve, came out, gave his Q&A session as he always does. And, you know, they're announcing that they may increase interest rates twice by the end of 2023. That is not a typo. I did not misspeak. Not the end of 2021, not the end of 2022, possibly two rate hikes by the end of 2023. And the market has thrown a tantrum thus far. Now, that's the knee-jerk reaction. We will have to see the follow-through this week and next week. But, you know, a lot of things can also come down the pike over the coming weeks as well. But that is the big news, because we don't have free markets. These are controlled and manipulated markets. This is a command and control economy. This is further evidence of this, because when one person can come out representing the vote and the decision of 12 idiots sitting around a big table, that's not a market. That's command and control. That is centralization. That is 12 people deciding what the price of money should be. That's what the interest rate is, the cost of money. They don't know, but they don't want the economy to collapse. They don't want the stock market to collapse. And we know that their liquidity injections from this central bank, our Federal Reserve, and other central banks the world over are the only thing that are keeping these markets up. It is a complete fraud. They know it. They know it. And when we get to their balance sheet, I think they have showed their hand. I think they know this. Now, I've been saying that for a long time, but the amount that they increased their balance sheet from the past week and the decision that they made last Wednesday, to me is indicative that they know full well what was likely going to be the fallout and what they had to do to cushion the blow. We'll get to that momentarily. So, market performance. With that news from the Federal Reserve, okay, the dollar took off. So we have the dollar index at 92 spot 30. It was trading around 89, okay? 89.90 handle before this. Now it's at 92 spot 30. It has not been this high in months. Now, this was a crowded trade, shorting the U.S. dollar, going long the euro and some other major currencies against the dollar. So once you get too lopsided on one side of the boat, it's not a surprise when everything might unravel. A data point comes out the other way, and everything gets unwound. And that can happen quickly. That may very well be part of what we're witnessing. Nothing goes straight down. Nothing goes straight up. But the other thing that I do want to keep the audience mindful of is that scenario of a dollar swan song, meaning a strong rise, maybe even a meteoric rise in the U.S. dollar because of geopolitical risks, because of domestic concerns, because of central bank policy, etc., etc., whatever the reason may be. There is the possibility of a dollar swan song. Its inevitable movement is lower, much lower. These fiat currencies are on the brink of collapse. That's what needs to happen. It's going to be a very painful situation, but that is what needs to happen because we cannot continue to live in La La Land. We just can't. This is just beyond ridiculous, and what we are witnessing now is criminal. It is in our faces, and nobody says a damn thing, okay? And the other concern that this will have is that scenario that I have mentioned many times over. I'm not going to get into it now, but that dollar doom loop scenario with a strengthening dollar, that will wreak a lot of havoc, especially in weaker economies. And of course, that will have blowback concerns here too in developed economies and the United States as well. There is no easy solution out of any of this. Believe me when I tell you. So it's just going to continue to be, let's just dig ourselves deeper and deeper and deeper into this hole and hope that something good comes out of it. That's not going to happen, but that is the situation. And because of this, we have just a lot of weakness on a lot of those major currency pairs, again, with the dollar strengthening. We have Bitcoin down currently about 4%, trading at $34,200 a coin. Now, Bitcoin was on a little bit of a wild ride last week as well, because none other than Elon Musk, the CEO of Tesla, came out with another tweet, of course, and mentioned that if these Bitcoin miners can get their act together and really start generating and mining Bitcoin with clean energy to some certain percentage, this is all nonsense. But regardless, this is what he said, that Tesla will once again accept Bitcoin as payment for purchase of their vehicles. And of course, that's all it took for this supposed highly decentralized market to be manipulated by one human being. At least the Federal Reserve is 12 idiots sitting around a big table. This is one idiot on a Twitter account with a handful of characters. At least Jay Powell has a speech. At least he has pages written. This guy sends a tweet, limited characters, and moves a multi, well, whatever it is now, a trillion-dollar market in Bitcoin. But hey, don't worry about it. It can't be manipulated, and it's completely transparent, and it's completely decentralized. But one person can move the market, okay? Just flies in the face of logic and reason, but these people will continue to do this because of the insanity that is going on out there with all of this money printing, which is inflation by definition. And when we talk about, as we did last week, jobs a long way to go, and with the initial jobless claims report that we have witnessed last week, well, you can have inflation and you can have high unemployment and a stagnant economy, low growth. And that is your recipe for stagflation. And it can be argued that we're already there. So that's the currency markets. Now, the Dow Jones Industrial Average posted its worst week since last October. It is trading at 33,200 points. It gave back a little over 600 points, or 1.85% on Friday. The S&P 500 gave back 1.7%. And the NASDAQ 100 gave back a little over 1% to close out the week on Friday. And it was a sea of red pretty much across the pond in Europe as well, and really across all markets for the most part, all because the Federal Reserve announced what the mainstream media and only the financial mainstream media could construe as a hawkish statement that they may increase interest rates twice by the end of 2023. Somehow, in this twisted world in which we live, that is a hawkish statement. And that was cause for concern to sell off stocks. Now, maybe it's just the excuse. Maybe this is just going to be a little bit of a pullback, and we'll go on to make new all-time highs in the coming weeks and months. Very well could be the case. Maybe it's a topping pattern in these markets, and that's it. Time will tell. I don't have that crystal ball. All I know is this is criminal on its face and everything that they are doing. And this is just robbing people blind, especially future and younger generations. It's just robbing them of their future growth and prosperity. But nobody cares. As long as your account balance goes up, you don't care who it's hurting. That's a problem. On the commodity front, we have WTI at $71.64 a barrel. Brent at $73.29 a barrel, so hanging on over that 70 handle. And with the lack of capital expenditures in the oil market as of late, with the loss of a lot of companies in that space due to the pandemic, you have supply issues, and you have federal governments the world over. So you have policy issues with trying to go quote-unquote green and capping and putting a lid on these energy systems, which is completely ridiculous. These energy sources, I should say, which is completely ridiculous, but they're going to continue to do it. So all this is going to continue to do is drive prices even higher, but we'll most likely be told that there is no inflation and there's no negative effects from any of this. Natural gas, $3.23. Gold and silver got shellacked off of the back of the news that the Federal Reserve might tighten and increase interest rates two times by the end of 2023. To me, this is a gift. This is a gift. It's very frustrating as a long-term believer and a long-term investor of gold and silver and mining stocks. But when you look at it, you just have to say this is a silver lining. This is a gift. This is the opportunity to accumulate more physical gold and silver, more mining stocks, more commodity stocks. This is an opportunity as far as I'm concerned, because they're not going to stop this nonsense. Now, the market, these crackheads on Wall Street, they want this nonsense to continue. It is in their interest with the amount of profits that they are making off of this funny money game. Okay? They don't want it to stop. They want to believe whatever the Federal Reserve tells them. Inflation is transitory. Fantastic. Yeah, it's transitory. They just want the printing press to continue because it allows them to make millions of dollars in bonuses, and they don't care. They simply do not care. Oh, and I came across an interesting article from HSBC. HSBC, major international bank, always in trouble. Well, they admitted that they had paid out $900 million over the past 12 months for rigging the currency markets. So, okay, they pay almost $1 billion for rigging the currency markets. Don't worry about it. Nobody goes to jail. So you can sleep well at night knowing that nobody went to jail. They committed a crime that if you had committed, they'd lock you up and throw away the key. But these guys, they completely got away with it. $900 million slap on the wrist. God only knows how much they ended up rigging. And that means simply ripping off the average Joe and Jane out there. Okay, but that's okay. They can get away with it. But gold, like I said, got shellacked, $1,764 an ounce. And silver's at $25.76 an ounce. And the good thing from a technical standpoint on both gold and silver is it is holding at a strong resistance level. Now, we'll see what type of follow-through there is next week. But that definitely took a big hit in the precious metals market. And it's completely nonsensical. When we look at the inflation data that's coming out, it's driving real rates even deeper into negative territory. We continue to see a lot of geopolitical risks that have yet to be handled, more popping up by the day. Central banks continue to print money. There's nothing but tailwinds for precious metals. And I think that they understand this, and this is sort of their kryptonite. This is the system's kryptonite, is having strong gold and silver markets. They know it, and of course we know that these markets are greatly manipulated too, because we talk about those deferred prosecution agreements all the time that end up becoming generated because one big bank after the next manipulates these markets, and again, nothing happens to them. But this is an opportunity, as far as I'm concerned, to acquire more. Now, you're going to have a stomach for volatility because this is sort of the most wanted character, if you will, for these central bankers to go after the precious metal space. We have copper at $4.12, pulling back a little bit as well over the week, and lumber is at $900 even. And a lot of people are saying, well, it's going to come back down to where it wasn't it very well, May, but where was it before all of this? The $400 or $500 range, okay? $900 is where we were at the beginning of the year, end of last year. And that price point alone added $24,000 to the new home price build. Okay, that was the cost add to construct a new home. $24,000 when lumber was at these prices. Now, where lumber was just really a handful of weeks ago at $1,700 per 1,000 linear board feet, just about, that added $36,000 in additional costs to build the average new home. So, for anybody saying that this is a collapse, well, maybe it will be, maybe we'll go back down, but we are still well above where we were before, and if this is the new range, that's inflationary, ladies and gentlemen. That's sticky. Because if you look back at a long-term chart of lumber, you're range-bound between $200 and $400, okay? So, even if we were to go back to, let's just say $600, and you were at your highest level in that range-bound area, for the past several years with the price of lumber. So at the higher range, that $400 level, okay? If we were to go back to $600, we would still be 50% higher than where we were historically trading at the high end of the range. You understand what I'm saying here? We are far from out of the woods. So understand that and understand that well. And to round it out, Uncle Sam's 10-year junk note is yielding 1.45%. So it is below its range bound level that we have been witnessing over the past few months, 1.45%. And again, this begs the question to be asked. This has to be asked of Jay Powell and others of the Federal Reserve System. You made the argument that increasing yields was indicative of a growing economy. And those yields have since been range bound since basically they made that comment a few months ago. Now these yields are breaking down. They're going lower. Well, logic would tell us, if you're telling us that higher yields are indicative of growth in an economic recovery, then falling yields would have to mean that the recovery is over and perhaps the economy is going back into contraction. What say you? That needs to be asked and that needs to be answered because it's just common sense and it's simply using their words against them. But that would be too easy for a financial journalist to ask, so I don't anticipate those types of questions being asked. And even if they were, he isn't going to answer them. So onward to the Department of Labor's initial jobless claims report. So for the week ending June 12th, initial claims on a seasonally adjusted basis came in at 412,000. This is a week-over-week increase of 37,000. The prior week's figure was revised downward by 1,000 to 375,000. So again, this week's number, 412,000, not good, not good at all. This is a reversal of trend, and this was well above market expectations, which I believe was somewhere around 360,000, so well above market expectations. On a non-seasonally adjusted basis, however, the number came in at 402,000, but still a week-over-week increase of some 37,000. For the week ending June 5th, this will be continuing claims on a seasonally adjusted basis. The number comes in at 3.5 million, a slight increase week over week by 1,000. However, on the non-seasonally adjusted basis, the number came in slightly below 3.3 million and was a decrease on a week over week basis of 45,000. With respect to the PUA program or the Pandemic Unemployment Assistance Program, one of the children of the Nobody Cares Act, for the week ending June 12th, 118,000 Americans filed an initial claim with that program. Then In aggregate, for the week ending May 29th, recall that in the aggregate figure, it lags by a couple of weeks, so this takes into consideration regular state unemployment benefits, federal employees, newly discharged veterans, the PUA and PEUC programs, extended benefits, state additional benefits, and WorkShare gives us a grand total of 14.8 million Americans continue to claim some form of unemployment insurance. 14.8 million. This is a week-over-week decrease of about 560,000, with the biggest week-over-week declines coming from regular state unemployment benefits, a week-over-week decline of 167,000. The PUA program, a week-over-week decrease of 254,000. The PEUC program, a week-over-week decrease of 74,500. And state extended benefits, a week-over-week decrease of about 54,000. So a lot of these programs are starting to tail off. So if the economy cannot gain a foothold, if it cannot find solid ground, I will not be surprised if Congress, at least, in the very least, puts forward an argument for more stimulus checks. Now, they may make the argument that it has to be more targeted. This time they'll get even more targeted than they were last time. Maybe people making $50,000 a year or less, $60,000, whatever the case may be, they'll make it a smaller cohort of the population. But they'll make the argument. And I would also imagine if the economy doesn't grab some sort of foothold, find solid footing, or if the markets continue to sell off, that Congress will get together magically and come up with some sort of infrastructure solution that they'll end up passing. Just so the markets can continue to move higher, just so we can continue with this smoke and mirror show. Regardless of the fact that infrastructure is needed, and we've talked about that here many times before, but that will be the trigger that will get bipartisanship and that could actually get something passed and signed by our demented President Joe Biden. It's all it takes. A little bit of weakness in the stock market, maybe a little bit of a downtrend over the course of a few months with some big economic data metrics that could be cause for concern, and they'll start spending more money that we don't have. So, talking about more money that we don't have, oh, and real quickly, that 14.8 million gives us a de facto unemployment rate of 10.8%. And of course, we're told the official rate now is, I believe, 5.8%. So, just about double that, but don't worry about it. So, onward to the Federal Reserve's balance sheet. We are now at another all-time high, and we are at $8.064 trillion. So, almost $8.1 trillion. So, congratulations, a new all-time high. Finally, breaching that $8 trillion mark, which we knew was just a matter of time, and it's going to continue going much, much higher. Because they're not going to start tapering, they're not going to start increasing interest rates for another 2 years, if that. And what will it be then? An increase of 25 basis points one time, and another increase of another 25 basis points the next time? Half of 1% increase at the end of 2023, over 2 years from now. It's completely ridiculous what these people can get away with. How anybody can take them seriously is beyond me, but they do. $8 trillion. That's a big number, ladies and gentlemen. We were at $800 billion during and prior to the great financial crisis. So over the course of 12 years, we've basically increased the Fed's balance sheet by almost 10 times. Almost 10 times. But hey, we were told that quantitative easing, what we're talking about here, was going to be temporary, be transitory. Just like we were told now that inflation is going to be temporary or transitory. You want to believe these people? Go ahead. You're going to get what you deserve. So almost $8.1 trillion, a week-over-week increase of $112 billion. $112 billion. This is one of the biggest week-over-week increases in quite a while. And this is actually evidenced on the graph, which is typically hard to see. But $112 billion is a ton of money, okay? And don't forget, a few weeks ago, they said, well, we're going to begin tapering our holdings of corporate debt. which is at $14 billion, and that's going to take us perhaps until the end of the year. They were just throwing that out there to see how the markets responded. Markets didn't like it, of course, but that was only $14 billion a drop in the bucket. They remain committed to their quantitative easing program of $120 billion per month, purchasing U.S. Treasuries and mortgage-backed securities, despite the fact that the housing market is on fire. It's on fire. People can't even afford to buy houses anymore. They can't afford to build them. They continue to purchase mortgage-backed securities. They did so during the Great Financial Crisis because housing prices were plummeting. Doesn't justify the action, but you can understand why they did it. They said, well, this is a problem. Housing prices are collapsing. We have to do something about it. Housing prices aren't collapsing. Housing prices are through the roof. Yet they continue to purchase $40 billion per month in mortgage-backed securities. Okay? These people don't care about you. Nobody is stopping them. No politician, no Democrat, no Republican. Where's Bernie Sanders? Where's Elizabeth Warren Pocahontas for the little guy? Where's Ted Cruz and Mike Lee and Rand Paul going after these guys? Where are they? They're absent. 96 to nothing. No votes for America. Don't you ever forget it. That was Nobody Cares Act 1.0, and they gave us 2.0, 3.0, and 4.0 is coming. Don't worry about it. They don't care. They don't care. Stop voting for them. Stop giving them your respect just because they throw a few key words out there that you like to hear. They don't care about you. These are the issues. This is your money. This is the future of your country. This is the future for your children, your grandchildren, your great-grandchildren, generations yet to be. They don't care. But they all enrich themselves, don't they? Stop giving them your vote. They don't deserve it. So, the reason I stated at the top of the podcast, I wanted to call out the Federal Reserve on this, knowing what they're talking about, in quotes here, okay, with pretty much understanding, of course, what they were going to vote on, what they were going to issue, how the markets may somehow, in this insanity, call two rate hikes by the end of 2023, hawkish, that markets might sell off. And so to preempt this, or to at least cushion some of the blow, some of the carnage, you know, just the markets going down 1%, I mean, my God, we, as the Federal Reserve, are going to increase, on a week-over-week basis, our balance sheet by $112 billion. Now, remember what I just said. Their quantitative easing program is $120 billion per month. Per month. They did $112 billion in 1 week. Okay? They know what they're doing. They know that they are the only game in town, with the other central bankers, of course, that are keeping these markets elevated. It's propping them up. You take away this crutch, It's a complete you-know-what show. It's a complete cluster you-know-what. It's all it is. And the further we go down this road, the further we get to the end of it. The closer we get to coming to the end of it. And when that day comes, it's not going to be good for anybody. Believe me when I tell you. This is extremely, extremely dangerous. They don't care. They're not challenged on it. This is supposed to be a system of checks and balances. Nobody overrules these people. Nobody oversees these people. Nobody says you can't do this. They can maybe ask a tough question here or there. Maybe that'll be a surprise, but sometimes it happens. And they just dismiss it because they know that nothing's going to happen to them. They know that they're not going to be overruled. They know that they're not going to be fired. And even if they are fired, some other idiot's just going to take their place and continue doing what they did. That's all. It's completely un-American. Top to bottom. No ifs, ands, or buts about it. $8.1 trillion. Can't stress that enough to you. If you don't understand what that looks like, well, then check out our Capital Economics Presentations Monetary Measures Part 1 and Part 2. And you can see it. And you can understand, as soon as you see it, that this doesn't make any sense whatsoever. You don't need to be a mathematician. You don't need to be an economist to understand common sense. To look at these charts, the things that I look at and talk about on a weekly basis here, you don't need to be any type of expert to understand what's going on here is ridiculous, that it's criminal and it should never happen. Because it's never happened before. But they're getting away with it. And they're using the pandemic as their justification to justify the unjustifiable. And there's no end in sight. And if things get even worse, well, what do you think they're going to do? You think they're just going to say, well, now we're going to increase interest rates? Now we're going to begin tapering if things get even worse? Hell no, not even close. They're just going to put the pedal to the metal even harder. So I hope you're prepared. I hope you're paying attention to the prices you're paying at the gas pump, at the grocery store. And don't just pay attention to the price, but pay attention to the volume. Because you have big stores like Costco that say, well, we don't want to give sticker shock to our customers. So we don't really want to increase prices. So we don't want to scare people away. But what we are going to do is we're going to decrease the volume. Six in one hand, half dozen in the other, folks. Told you to watch, to be mindful of this and to look out for this because it was coming. And this is just the beginning. Okay? So with that, on the road to stagflation, I say, oh yeah, I say we're already there. Just nobody wants to admit it. Again, I may do another podcast this evening, a markets overnight segment. If not, I will do my best to at least get a couple out this week, but no promises. With that, again, happy Father's Day. Stay diversified, stay vigilant, and stay with the Capital News. I'm Alex Caritas. Godspeed.